welcome BCE and BCE CEO Mirko Bibic to our conference. Thank you so much for joining. It means a lot that you made the trip down. We really appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Thank you, Matt.
All right. So I thought I'd begin maybe focusing on, like, kind of your AI initiatives and announcements and Ziply before getting into kind of, like, the business update and what's going on in the wireless and back to school and
Sure.
and broadband. Because I think there's a lot of it's very topical, I think, at the moment. So maybe to begin and set the stage, because I think the backdrop to a lot of the AI announcements is really the sovereign AI push, which is occurring, and, like, why that's important and, you know, what it means for, like, the country and for BCE.
Okay. Two very good questions. So let me start at the what it means for the country at the macro level, maybe thematically, and kind of set the theme. It's the macro themes that then kind of inform the investment thesis, certainly for us in terms of where we're making investments and obviously for investors looking to, you know, at AI opportunities. So at the macro level, if you think of kind of the geopolitical environment globally, you've got, you know, countries certainly like Canada who are, and we're not the only ones, but you've got kind of the national security considerations. You've got the diversification of the economy, economic growth. You know, those all come together, and AI is a significant component of that, where, you know, we are very, very strong in AI in Canada, been less strong in production and deployment, but certainly in the science of it. It is a massive opportunity for economic growth everywhere. You know, Canada is certainly alive to that issue, and we are on the cusp of, you know, AI is basically, with AI, we're on the cusp of kind of, you know, massive transformation that we haven't seen since the advent of the internet. So if you look at it from that perspective, it's a very big opportunity, particularly so when we go back to the geopolitical issue where sovereignty becomes an issue. And what is sovereignty from an AI perspective? It's the idea that the data resides, you know, in the country entirely, so it doesn't traverse any other border. It just stays in the country. Where the data is stored and where the technology is housed are in data centers that are in Canada, owned and operated by Canadian entities who are subject to Canadian laws from beginning to end. And beyond that, sovereignty goes beyond that. And that the technology that's used to power AI is actually also operated and controlled by Canadians. So when you look at it from that perspective, therefore, that macro theme, you know, it's a very, you know, large opportunity in Canada. And we should probably, I think you're going to ask me kind of where we play there. But I'll stop here with one more sentence and let you ask me your specific question on, you know, where we're going to play there. If you think about what Bell's core business has been for 145 years, it's been connecting people to each other, connecting companies to their customers, and connecting everyone in Canada to technology. And, you know, what we're doing in the AI space is connecting Canadians to AI technology. So I'll stop there. And I'm sure you'll want to
know that. No, that's a good overview. And so I think you've made some announcements, like, specifically more on the inference side of AI and on some announcements on, you know, size, general size of data center build that would accompany it over a period of time. And so what is it that Bell is doing on the inference and with the data centers, and who are you partnering with to make that happen?
It's a great question. Let me unpack that quickly, but in its entirety. So I said what I said. My last sentence in the last question was said for a reason. We're connecting Canadians to AI technology. Mm-hmm. So what that means, we're going to play in the full stack of AI, and let me very quickly go through them. You know, the first layer of that stack is network. You're connecting data centers with fiber. That is our wheelhouse. All right? So no mystery there. The next layer of the stack is data centers. Purpose-built AI data centers. Not standard colo, purpose-built AI data centers. And there, if you've got the land, the power, the cooling, you've got an advantage. And the critical advantage in this space right now is time to power.
Mm-hmm.
And we have all of those. And you see we've launched a site in British Columbia in June, and we've announced more. And that is, fairly frankly, it's just, you know, it's putting up a data center, and you have access to the low-cost hydropower. So it's quite capital light. So that's the second layer. The third layer there is compute infrastructure. As you can see, we have not owned and operated, purchased the compute. We've chosen to partner with those who do compute. So in the case of Grok, inferencing,
mm-hmm.
We just announced another one with Buzz High Performance Computing. So, you know, we're partnering in a capital light way in order to provide the compute infrastructure to our customers. Above that, you've got the software layer. So again, think of LLMs. Not going out and designing and building LLMs. We're partnering, for example, with Cohere. We have a massive partnership with Cohere. And then the last layer on that stack, in my mind, is all the AI technology advisory services. And we have a managed service provider called Ateco, where we're able to provide those very sophisticated AI advisory services to our customers. So that's part of our business. The top layer on AI advisory is part of our business. The bottom, the very first layer, fiber, that's our core wheelhouse. The data centers we can do in capital light, and everything in between we're partnering.
So can we maybe focus on one element of that right now, which is the compute? Mm-hmm. Because if I look at Grok, and they have an example of another sovereign AI deal that they've done. Saudi Arabia is an example, which I don't know if that is a good analogy or not, but it's the one that I kind of come across. And in that instance, somebody is a partner that purchases the compute from Grok, and then there is a revenue share that pays the partner back for buying the compute, and then once there's a return threshold that's met, you know, revenue gets split among the partner and Grok at it. You know, it splits differently. So Grok makes their money on the back end. So should we assume that Grok is following that same model? Somebody will be announced as a partner that's buying the compute that will then be subject to this kind of revenue share split? Or is the deal a different construct?
That is a model that I also understand Grok has deployed elsewhere. That is not the model that Bell and Grok have deployed in the first facility in British Columbia.
Okay.
In the first facility in British Columbia, Grok's own compute that they've taken the entire space, they put up the racks. It's their compute.
Okay.
We they pay us for access to the facility on a long-term basis. Now there are other models like the partnership model, which you've actually described, a partnership model where, you know, somebody, it could be the person, it could be the entity that actually owns the data center, will buy the inferencing chips from Grok, and put them install the racks in the facility, and then there's a partnership split between Grok and the partner.
Okay.
That is not the model we've employed or deployed in our first data center. Look, we take a big step back. We're playing in the layers of the stack where we are very good at, or it's our core business, or lanes that we have developed, like managed service provider with Ateco. The other layers, we've chosen to do it in a capital light partnership way. And if you take a step back, what we're going to be building with Bell AI Fabric is to be the backbone of the AI ecosystem in Canada, which has tremendous opportunity. There's an addressable market there that's in the billions, that's growing in the double digits, and Bell AI Fabric will ride that wave, and there's significant revenue opportunity in the years to come that's in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and we're doing it in a capital light way. I think we've stated publicly recently that you're looking at kind of in that $200 to $300 million range of investment over the next 2.5 to 3 years, and we're going to be very disciplined in operating an overall BC business at a 14.5% capital intensity, and that factors in all the investments we plan to make in Bell AI Fabric. So there's growth, high growth potential, and when you're talking about sovereign AI in particular, given the answer to the first question and the kind of geopolitical and economic growth themes there, One significant element that stands us apart from most others or many others is the notion of trust. And the Bell brand is one of the most trusted brands in the country in any sector of the economy. And when you combine that with, you know, our core assets, that it's hard to duplicate, particularly in the enterprise space where most large, frankly, 95 of the 100 top Canadian companies are with Bell. That's a big advantage that nobody else has.
Right. Okay. And maybe just to finish off, you mentioned Ateco,
yep.
Which, you know, is sort of a grouping of businesses, I guess, really within, you know, Bell's business wireline services that sort of can help kind of modernize, you know, companies, updating legacy systems and so forth. That is where kind of this Bell AI Fabric will fit in with the connection to the business, you know, customers buying AI services through Bell. And there's a connectivity layer there as well. I know that there's a plan within Bell Business Markets to grow that bucket of revenue. Is that what is identified as like growing to up to $1 billion in the next, I don't think there's an exact time frame, but is this the linkage? Is this the engine that'll get that growth within that Bell Business Markets, this AI initiative with through the sales of the services yeah. Ateco offers?
Maybe the best way to answer it is at, let me answer it this way. So the Bell Business Markets, our enterprise business, has been significantly underappreciated, and we're starting to surface it more, highlight it more, because the potential in that space is quite large, and it comes through a lot of you know, hard work over the years and a lot of really focused strategic thinking, and you know, there's a tremendous amount of potential there and growth potential. And if you think we have a unique set of assets that can't be duplicated in the enterprise space in telecom, most other large kind of mega cap traditionally legacy telcos have struggled, including ourselves, in the enterprise space. You know, technology disruption and competitive disruption. So it's been kind of a constant decline. We are very unique in the sense that, you know, we in the core business, the declines are modest, starting to stabilize and inching up to growth. And you add the collection of interrelated businesses to the core wireless and wireline business and enterprise, and there's now growth. Mm-hmm. And so what is that? So it starts first with our fiber assets, which we have the scale that nobody else has. Our brand, the trusted brand, our deep, deep enterprise relationships that span 145 years, right there's a natural advantage. So you have 5G, fiber, the relationships, the brand, and now you add three related high growth, net new growth. Mm-hmm. This is not displacing anything, this is net new, and the three are managed service provider, the MSS, the systems integrator, managed service provider business of Ateco, which helps companies on their technology modernization journey, just like we are undergoing ourselves. So we have operator expertise in the space. We bring that expertise to bear for our enterprise clients with a particular focus on the hyperscaler, ServiceNow, Salesforce, and AI integration. We have cybersecurity. The cybersecurity business, and of course, when you think of, you know, security, you do think of Bell, you know, core network security, but also cybersecurity, they go together. And then there's Bell AI Fabric. Mm-hmm. So all those three technology solutions businesses, AI Fabric, Ateco, and cybersecurity, work together. One pulls through the other, fiber pulls them through, or they pull fiber through. So it all works as a unified strategic whole. And then to your question on the exact kind of expectations of growth. So on the Ateco business is what we said would grow from around 200, 250 million in revenue to $1 billion by 2030.
Okay.
The other two, cybersecurity and AI Fabric, are over and above that.
Okay, that's great. That's a good overview. Thank you. So maybe shifting gears now, I mean, we could stay on AI, I think, for a lot longer, but shifting gears to the other kind of exciting change that is happening at BC is like your Ziply deal is closed. I think you've the debt has been kind of redeemed. Like you're sort of moving full steam ahead here, and so maybe just by the end of the year, you'll have 1.5 million passings. There's going to be another 500,000 that'll be built, another 500,000 that'll be built to be 2 million in the footprint. And then you have the partnership, which will build another 1 million in the footprint, and then 5 outside in low-cost areas that you've identified. But can you kind of put some context in the pace of the build that you're planning? I know it's early days for the partnership to mm-hmm. be able to, but you must have some targets that maybe it's time to share, or maybe just high level would be helpful.
I think the Ziply Fiber story is a great story. So we, a couple of high level points. We closed earlier than anticipated, which is a credit to the Ziply Fiber and Bell teams working together. That's one. The performance of Ziply Fiber, subscriber growth, revenue growth, EBITDA growth, has been better than we expected it would be when we made the initial acquisition announcements in November. It's a particular credit to the Ziply Fiber team. And the third high-level point I'd like to make is, this is really, really important. The Ziply Fiber management team that has built Ziply Fiber from scratch, essentially, back in 2020, they are with us. They are now part of the BCE family. And I think, again, that's great news because they're an outstanding team, but I think it's also a credit to how we're working together as a team. And that's important to keep the operational momentum going. So what we're going to accomplish is we think that by 2028 we'll have above 3 million homes, fiber lines built, and largely in the 4 core states in the Pacific Northwest, with an ambition to get to 8 million, as you pointed out. So I think those gives you a couple of milestones there on the fiber passings.
Okay. And then there's there seems to be a foot race to build, fiber that's only accelerating in the U.S. How comfortable are you about being able to be first to fiber in the areas where you want to build? My understanding is you've identified more than enough homes to be able to make that happen. But just if you can get some comment on, how you feel your ambitions match up with what's happening in the market recently.
Yeah. So, again, let's go back to the previous point, one of the previous points I made. I know because I've been told, but one of the reasons that the management team, has stayed with us and wants to execute the plan is they're energized about what BCE brings to the table, and what we've brought to the table is the ability for Ziply Fiber to accelerate what was in their initial build plan to get to that 3 million-ish homes in the 4 core states, so accelerate that and expand beyond that. They wouldn't be excited about that if we all didn't collectively believe that it's mm-hmm. doable. And what we did do with the PSP partnership is we unlocked certainly the funding component for that. So what do you need? You need to identify areas that don't have fiber, and there are a lot of those areas in the United States. And fiber availability is only 50% of the country, so there's tons of opportunity. You need to have the team to do it. We have the team to do it, and of course you need to have the funding capacity to do it, and with the PSP partnership, we've unlocked that. Mm-hmm. But those are the three critical ingredients, and we have, there's the Ziply Fiber backbone that extends beyond the Pacific Northwest, which gives us an opportunity to kind of build along those areas, and again, there's a tremendous amount of potential given how little fiber availability there is in the U.S. compared to Canada, and BCE's an expert fiber operator as well.
So in the U.S., the other big theme is, convergence, which you have two camps. It's not as though it's a decided argument. The AT&T's and Verizon's seem to be pushing the notion that there's a mutually beneficial relationship between offering fiber and wireless. Then you have on the other side of it T-Mobile, which says, people aren't buying based on wanting one bill, they buy the best service. And so fiber obviously lines up as the best service and can win. So just where do you fall on that?
I think both camps are right.
Yeah.
And here, I'll tell you why. In Canada, clearly, convergence is the predominant theme. And there's a reason for that. You've got four very competitive players in Canada, and all four operate their own wireline and wireless networks to larger and lesser degrees, but they do. And the amount, the extent of overlap between their owned wireless networks and their owned wireline networks is pretty extensive. So you have a different market structure, but you do see the results of convergence, lower churn, higher lifetime value, et cetera, et cetera. So, from that kind of thematic point of view, that camp is correct, and we see it in Canada, and Canada, I certainly endorse that point of view. In the U.S., I think both camps are also right there. If you have extensive fiber cover networks of your own, and you have an extensive wireless network of your own, of course, you're going to, try to find ways to put those two together. But the other camp is also correct that ultimately, the customer just wants better connectivity, and connectivity is critical to every single household. And customer will always choose better, and fiber is better.
Yeah.
And why? If that is true, it's unassailable, because you see companies like Ziply Fiber, and there are many others who have kind of started from scratch and are taking significant share away from the non-fiber players because customer wants better. Will there be a time where the market will evolve to a degree where that convergence becomes the predominant theme, perhaps? And when that time comes, we will be ready. And I think BCE is also uniquely positioned from that point of view, because we are also an expert wireless operator. We know what we're doing. We have extensive global relationships in the wireless space, so we can bring that expertise to bear to Ziply Fiber when the time comes. But you can see it in the results. The absence of a wireless offering in Ziply Fiber has not slowed them down. In fact, I think the absence of a wireless offering has perhaps enhanced the early success of Ziply Fiber, because Ziply is able to offer such a compelling, simple package to consumers.
Yeah.
There's three, four internet packages. Pick the one you want. It's easy, and off you go. There's no confusion. The pricing's simple, and so the customer service and the NPS scores are through the roof, and you see the penetration.
Well, and it's interesting. Even those who push convergence say it begins with the network. So yeah. I take your point. I think you're right. So maybe we'll kind of pivot a bit to the Canadian wireless and broadband businesses. But I wanted to get there kind of by asking about kind of your business transformation initiatives, and mostly in the context of, we've seen prices in Canada, especially on the wireless side, kind of really step down, which highlights how the pricing environment can change more quickly than the cost structure of an organization, especially large organizations. But you're busy, attacking costs. Yep. And I think you have a lot of avenues where costs can, on the copper side and on combining systems. So maybe just touch on, where you are on that business transformation and on that cost-cutting journey, and how much more kind of room there is to run there.
Yeah, so this is a really important one, because as prices go down, obviously you need to align your cost structure with price and revenues for sure. And if you go back to what we've consistently stated, certainly throughout 2025, is we are focused on four strategic initiatives or four strategic pillars: putting the customer first, delivering the best fiber and wireless networks, leading an enterprise with AI-powered solutions, and building a digital media and content powerhouse. So those are the four key strategic pillars, and we say all of that is supported by our business transformation initiatives. And what we're trying to do is take out a massive amount of costs while at the same time delivering better experiences for our customers. And you do that by focusing on those four priorities and making the right investments in those four, and making sure you cut costs in other areas. And that's how you're able to deliver better experiences at lower cost. So things like, you know, what are we doing? First of all, get calls out of the system. Customers who are on fiber call less. So that's kind of, it's basic, but it's true. It's massive cost reduction. Where you have fiber, they call less. When they do call, and we use AI technologies to, first of all, we don't want them, if they have an issue, we don't want them to call, so we direct them to self-serve. Mm-hmm. When self-serve doesn't work, then they need to call in. We make sure that we have kind of virtual, agents or chatbots or voice-assisted agents to interact with the customer. So again, that reduces cost. So fewer calls, more self-install, use virtual agents where you can, and then finally, when the issue is too complex, you have an expert case manager who can handle the issue without multiple transfers. Every single one of those things reduces costs, delivers better experience. Then you have self-install. There's been a tremendous amount of take-up on self-install, particularly, of course, it's where we have fiber. That's reduced our overall cost. When there is an issue with your network, we direct the customers first to virtual repair to repair the issues themselves. It saves them time. It's quite intuitive. Lowers cost for us. Saves them time, better experience, lower cost for us, better for us and our shareholders. So those are the kinds of things that we're doing all the way through. And the more of this you do, the better it gets, the more savings you have. And that's why, we've been quite comfortable sharing kind of our journey on cost transformation and keep upping the targets. But those are the kinds of, there's a whole bunch of other things we're doing, of course, but those are the big ones that lower costs and improve the customer experience. And it's no accident that in an environment the last 3 years where prices have compressed, like you've pointed out, we've grown our consolidated margins or kept them stable depending on the quarter.
Yeah, oh, that's great. And so maybe focusing a bit on just like the wireless market, obviously it was the back-to-school season, very important season in Canada, typically kind of characterized by elevated promotional activity. I mean, for what it's worth, like my observation when I was walking around the malls before coming down here for the conference was it seemed pretty mute.
Yep.
But there were deals, obviously. Everyone had device promotions, but I wanted to get your kind of take on, how that shaped up kind of nationally and if there was like pockets of elevated promotion or maybe something below the line that was hard to see from an observer's perspective.
Yeah, again, on this question, let me start first with focusing on a key kind of investment theme. So Canada's always, in the past, had been quite, thematically was a good place to invest if you wanted to be in wireless, particularly given the stability of the environment across across multiple proof points, industry structure, pricing, etc. And that changed with kind of the price compression and the price disruption in the last couple of years. But I think we're starting to come back to that theme of Canadian wireless stability. It is a different, the pricing has stabilized at a different level than it was in 2019. I mean, that's just a fact. But you're seeing green shoots of stability in the pricing environment, which is an undeniably good thing. And I think it's a good thing all around. You've got four competitive players. Consumers are benefiting from that. They get a lot of value for high-performing networks, which are among the best in the world. And then from an investment perspective, we're now through, I think, we're starting to have confidence to say that we appear to be through the significant ramp down in pricing to stability, to slight growth. And we started hinting at that in Q2 as an industry, certainly we have, but saying, look, we've got to wait till back to school. That'll be the next proof point. And I think on back to school, which we're at the tail end of, you've seen, first of all, the rack rate pricing or the standard service pricing is higher than it was a year ago, like $5, $6, $7, particularly at the lower end of the market. And the level of discounting during the back to school period was the same as last year. In other words, it wasn't deeper. So you had kind of relatively stable discounting in certain pockets, but off of higher base pricing. So And then I think it was, the volumes are down.
Yeah.
The market's still growing, but the volumes are down because of, again, fewer newcomers coming to Canada. But I think what we started to see in Q2, I think has held in Q3. So I think back thematically, we're back to, the stability of the Canadian environment in wireless with kind of growth to come as we look into the back half of next year.
With that stability, are we beginning to see, if nobody is being overly aggressive promoting, should that create kind of less churn across the system? Any one quarter can be one way or the other, but if this is the trend we're on, should that be the natural result? Or is it the case that when volumes are down, it's kind of inevitable that people are going to just fight harder, promote harder for the few that remain out in the market? Like, how do you think about, what are you seeing and what do you expect?
I think there's a desire in the industry, and everybody, of course, wants their fair share. But you go through a transition, right? When the market growth is declining, and at the beginning of that decline, you see your sales and net adds declining, kind of you're unsure of where you sit vis-a-vis the others. But I think we've all figured out the market's declined. So when we each, get our fair share, it's going to be, you're going to get the fair share you want, but the absolute numbers are going to be less. But nobody wins on how many sales or net adds you get. You win on the financial results you're able to deliver based on the market share that you get. And in our case, I think that's where we have, so thematically, wireless market stabilizing. But again, a BCE theme is we have the most upside in wireless compared to the others. And I would say that just even in the context of just getting fair share, not outsized share, and why. We have distribution strength. We have best networks. We have the most trusted brand in the industry. We have the most upside on churn reduction, so retention. And you can see, our churn on an absolute level is still higher than our competitors, which is not where we want it to be. But our decline, our rate of improvement in churn has improved the most. I think we have a lot of more churn upside to come. And we have been very consistent, certainly for the last, for many years. But while I've been CEO, we've been very consistent in saying that our primary focus is premium brand loadings. And you see, like, everything we said we would do in the recent past, we have done. We said we were going to tilt very heavily towards the Bell brand. We're doing that. The significant majority of our sales and net adds come on the Bell brand. We said we were going to reduce churn. We said we were going to drive towards leading the industry in the number of kind of having the lowest number of complaints in the industry because no one wants that. We've done that. So we have a lot of upside. So I think my view is the winner is the player that's able to capture fair share of the growth that's there on the premium brand and deliver improvement on the financial side as we come out and get into that stable period.
Do you see a difference in churn? I mean, you are converged in most markets, but there are some where you're not. I mean, do you see within Canada like a benefit to your business? And is there more upside to run on that front where you could, convergence could increase even more, the percentage penetration of converged customers could increase, and that would be a natural avenue to lowering churn, lowering cost of retention because they're just stickier.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I think we have more upside than anybody else on improving churn, particularly on wireless, but that would include fiber internet. And where does that come from? It comes from a whole number of things. So what I said before on delivering better experiences and driving calls out because they have a better network and making sure you address the customer's problem very quickly through self-serve and virtual repair and those things, that is a big determinant of NPS improvement and churn reduction. So take that as a given. We're going to keep working on that. We find that where, you know, we have fiber, the churn is significantly better than where we don't. I think that's pretty obvious. Where we sell wireless and wireline together, and you know, households who have both services from us have better churn and higher lifetime value. And as you increase product intensity in a home, you tend to see you know, higher lifetime value, lower churn. And so that's a function of, you know, the breadth of services you sell, that you can sell at a positive margin. And you're talking about fiber internet, wireless, content, mm-hmm. Particularly streaming bundles now, and we've launched a few compelling content offers in the marketplace where you have Crave and TSN. Crave is a premium entertainment product. TSN is the sports leader. So you have Crave TSN, you have Crave Disney Plus Netflix, and combinations of those. Our residential business is selling those bundles. You'll see our media business also selling those bundles. Where we're uniquely advantaged compared to everybody else is we have owner economics on several of those products, TSN, Crave in particular. The others don't. And then other value-added services where we think we can stand apart. So we're offering Perplexity as an example, Perplexity AI to our customers, back to the AI theme.
Yeah.
Adding those services together increases product intensity, lowers churn. So those are the things we're doing to add value to our customers, increase NPS, increase lifetime value, lower churn. I mean, they all go.
So the Perplexity, that would be like you're paying like a subscription, or that gets included. It's a subscription-based app that through a bundle gets included for customers. Is that how?
Correct. Over time, what will happen there is if the customer wants access to Perplexity Pro, they pay a monthly fee to Perplexity, and we'll get our revenue share of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's just using our, in this case, it's using our vast distribution strength mm-hmm. in Canada. You know, that's why Perplexity wants to partner with us, obviously.
Yeah.
And for us, it allows us to add value to our customers in a way that adds margin to our business.
Okay. And then on broadband generally, I know that there was a time when, you know, you were leaning in very aggressively to kind of increase share, particularly in Quebec, it seemed to be the primary region of focus. You know, that's, you know, waned in certain markets. I'm just wondering if you could let us know kind of your kind of stance on that. You obviously will always compete aggressively, but it was heightened there for a while. Like, how is that kind of evolving? And where does that stand today?
Yeah, so where we have fiber and the footprint is tenured. In other words, we've had it for 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. We've seen our market share in fiber, tenured fiber footprint be, you know, quite strong. We're into the high 40s, low 50%, which is pretty impressive. And so we have that in Ontario, and I think you've seen stability in the market. Again, you know, the providers, particularly in Ontario, are giving significant value to the consumer. There, you know, we've got best networks in the world, the fastest speeds at good prices. So you've seen the prices stabilize there. In Quebec, this is what you're referring to in terms of some aggressiveness. You know, we have been pretty open that, you know, we needed to load the network that we built in Quebec because we were, the market share was too low. That has also improved quite significantly. It's not where it is. You know, our market share in Quebec is not where it is in other parts of the country, but we're at a point where, again, it comes down to me to balancing share with financials. And so we have, I think we have tempered some of the pricing actions that we've had in the Quebec marketplace the last couple of years, but you know, we're not it's a competitive market, so we're not the only player in town. And I think the cable company sees market share erosion and sometimes decides it's going to lean more towards, you know, protecting financials. At other times, it decides it's going to try to protect market share, and so we have to react to that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it changes from week to week.
Well, thank you again for joining. What a difference a year makes. I think the conversation went from how are you going to fix one thing or another to now it's how are you going to grow in AI? What's the opportunity? How are you going to grow with Ziply? What's the opportunity? And are we on the tail end of some improvement in wireless? So I think it's a much more constructive conversation this year.
Yeah, I think I'll end, if I have 6 seconds here, I'll end with, we have delivered in 2025, everything we said we were going to do. Said we were going to strengthen the balance sheet. We've done that. We said we're going to focus on four priorities. We've done that. Thematically, I think there's a great opportunity in AI in the places where we have a right to win. The enterprise business has kind of been largely underappreciated. I think that's starting to change. You see the Ziply growth potential, the significant execution upside in our core business in Canada. And we didn't talk about media, but we'll be one of the very few former traditional media companies that is going to deliver consistent revenue and EBITDA growth on an annual basis. And it's because of the strategic moves we've made over the last 5 years to pivot from traditional media to be a fully digital media and content player. So I think just reinforcing what you said, I mean, a year's made a big difference.
A big difference. Yeah, very positive. Well, thank you again for joining the conference, and thank you everyone for attending.
Thank you. Thanks, Matt.